Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today's guest is Robert McCaw. Robert is a published author of multiple books. Robert talks about his latest book, Off the Grid, his writing process, and of course, a round of book recommendations. Now let's get to the show. Hi, Robert. Welcome to What You Read Next podcast.
Well, thank you, and I'm glad to be here.
So glad to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've reinvented myself a bunch of times. I started off in college as a mathematician, and I decided I didn't want to be in a room and never talk to another human being in my life. So I changed direction. I went into the Army. I was a second lieutenant in the Army, and I was a soldier for a while. While I was there, I was fortunate enough to be called into the camp commander's office one day, and he gave me a thick purple book, and he said, I've just appointed you the prosecutor in a court-martial. This was back in the days when the rules were that the defense counsel had to have at least as much legal training as the prosecutor, which meant that both could be novices, and I certainly was. But I tried a case against a member of the Pennsylvania Bar. He made a bunch of motions I never understood. But I said to the court, why don't you hear the evidence? And they agreed with that proposition, and I tried the case, and I convicted the accused, who was guilty. And I thought this was pretty exciting, so that's why I went to law school. I went to the University of Virginia. I clerked for a year for Mr. Justice Black. And then I practiced law for 40 years. Finally, I decided to become a novelist. That's the sort of the outline story.
I like it. So you had quite a career. You had quite a few career changes. It's exciting. So what inspired you to start writing?
Well, I went to Hawaii for the first time in 1986. I actually went to an American Bar Association convention in Honolulu. And afterward, I went over to the Big Island, the island of Hawaii, and I fell in love with the place. There was something just magical about the diverse climates, about the mountains. I began to do a lot of reading about Hawaii. I was fortunate enough to meet some really interesting people who became close friends. And I had always wanted to write a mystery thriller. I began writing. This was back in the days when I had a very busy, active legal career. And so I would write a few paragraphs or a chapter. And then I would put it down for months at a time, and I would come back to it and write a little more, literally kept that process up for 25 years until I finally retired and said to myself, I'm going to finish this. And that's when I finished the first book.
I love it. And so you're a lawyer. So how much of your experience do you bring into your writing?
I think the answer to that is a lot, in a lot of different ways. As a lawyer, I did a lot of writing. I mean, you write briefs, you write arguments, write reports. One of the things that if you're going to be credible as a lawyer, you have to stick relatively closely, more or less, to the provable facts. But if you're a novelist, you just get to make it up as you go along. If the facts don't fit with the theory that you come up with, you can change the facts. So first, I had a lot of experience writing. Secondly, my practice involved a lot of investigations, both civil and criminal. and a lot of litigation. I dealt with a lot of prosecutors. I met a lot of people who, in one way or another, were charged with wrongdoing, some of them criminal, some of them civil. And I got lots of ideas for stories. Some of the characters that you meet are just absolutely fascinating human beings. And some of the characters in the book come out of my experience with prosecutors and with bad guys, if you will. Some of the processes that I saw, grand jury processes, interrogation processes, investigatory kinds of processes, come through in the book. So there's a good deal of my legal experience that's wrapped up in the book. And I think I can say the same thing, actually, for my military experience. There's a lot of that that's also wrapped up in the book, particularly in Off the Grid, where have these two people who are murdered, and you don't know who they are, and slowly their background is dug out sort of piece by the detective, making that the sort of first mystery of the story. And that's before you get to the questions of who killed them or why.
It really reflected back, I think, the whole military history about each of the people that we're uncovering. Like, that reflected. I was like, oh, this is someone who actually knows what they're talking about. Which was exciting to read.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, one of the things that I, I said, you, as a novelist, you can make up the facts. You have to be credible to your readers. You have to give your readers a story that they can relate to and that is believable within the context that they understand it. And I think that's one of the challenges of writing, is to make it really interesting, to make it unique, to make it different, and yet to make it relatable in the sense that it's actually a believable story. I really don't want to write about superheroes, you know. All buildings in a single bound, that's just not where I want to go.
I really liked the writing. I liked the fact that it was like police procedural, but we got to see the prosecutor, we got to see the military, we got to see things that we didn't think would be related to it, but yet it all makes sense. And at the end of the story, how it all tied in together.
Well, and it was fun for me to take my research about Hawaii and the stories. There's a phrase in that people use in Hawaii all the time about, quote, talking story. I was really fortunate to have some really close friends. One of them was Ellsworth Kohi, who was the 13th of 17 children who grew up on Kauai, and just, you know, would relate stories to me about his childhood, about his family. They would get together for family gatherings, and there would be 250 of them. And I'll never forget one of his pieces of advice to me. He says, if you ever get caught in a tsunami and you can't get up high, you look for the nearest palm tree and you skinny up.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's so true. So you're passionate about Hawaii, and Hawaii inspired you to start writing. So you've been studying the history and the culture, and you set off the grid in Hawaii, making it a very atmospheric read. How much of your passion about Hawaii was a jumping board point for this book?
Well, it was really the love of Hawaii and the passion to kind of share that knowledge that was a significant driver for the book. Particularly, that first book, I became fascinated by the top of Mauna Kea. And you think about the ancient Hawaiians without winter clothes and without shoes, who climbed this mountain and dug these huge stone pits where they mined a hard form of lava that could be used for stone tools. And it was a great mystery to me about sort of how they did it. And then the best mystery of all is that someplace probably in the 16th or early 17th century, they just stopped using the quarry, and no one knows why. And so that's part of the mystery that goes into the to the first book. I took this historical mystery and turned it into a murder mystery.
I love it. I really love the setting. Like, as someone who has never been to Hawaii and has very little known culture about it, it was so great to get to be immersed in it and get to know the history, get to know the culture, get to know about the people and expectations and what is the state of being right now. Whether they want to be a sovereign state, want to be a sovereign nation, or they want to be a state and whatnot.
Well, it's interesting because I think of Hawaii as being sort of two Hawaiis. Mm-hmm. There is the tourist Hawaii, the hula hoops, the hula skirts and the palm trees and the beaches, which is, it's true, but it's largely manufactured by a PR machine. And then there is sort of the real Hawaii, the people who live there, their very unique history, their unique relationship with the United States, the sort of the trials and tribulations from their history, the unique fauna, the fact that the bat was the only mammal that was indigenous to the islands. It just is a very different story than people normally see when they go to Honolulu and go to Waikiki.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine. So you're a published author of two books. What was your journey to get your first book published?
Well, the first book I self-published.
Okay.
I did it through Mill City Publishing, which is up in Minneapolis.
Okay.
It was a reasonably expensive proposition for a novice author, but I wanted a really, really professional product.
Mm-hmm.
And Mill City, gave me the cover designs, and they did a terrific job of offering editorial suggestions. They did a fabulous job of proofreading the material, and they published a really high-class paperback book.
Mm-hmm.
And that was critical to my efforts to get an agent.
Mm-hmm.
That book is really responsible for the fact that Mel Parker took me on as a client, and he got me hooked up with Ocean View Publishing,
mm-hmm.
which published Off the Grid, and has now agreed to publish my third novel, which is going to be coming out in 2020, called Fire and Vengeance, which is also set in Hawaii. They involve the same characters, but they're completely independent stories. I'm now working on a fourth one.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love it. I love the fact that there's a sequence, to still get involved with the characters and getting to see them, as they grow into, I personally love series as opposed to standalones, just because there's like more depth and there's growth in the world building. So I'm excited there's a third book coming up.
Well, it's really fun to take a character like Koa Kane.
Mm-hmm.
He has a very unusual backstory. Mm-hmm. He's a pure Hawaiian. He comes from a little town on the northern coast of the Big Island.
Mm-hmm.
His mother was a native healer, and his father was a sugar worker who was brutalized by the very tough conditions in the sugar fields, particularly as the plants became aged and the economics of the sugar industry declined. And his father was killed in an accident one of the mills, except Koa finds out from his father's coworkers that it really wasn't an accident.
Mm-hmm.
He goes after the mill manager. It worked out, he didn't really intend to kill the man, but he got in a fight with the man and killed him. And so you have a a police officer here who actually he killed a man and who got away with it. He staged a suicide. And one of the interesting things that allows you to do then is that after he becomes a police officer, he goes and looks at the file from his own case and learns basically all of the things not to do in an investigation. And that theme comes into the book and into his motivation because he's burdened by remorse. He's burdened by guilt and his life. Ambition is sort of to expunge his own crime, and he does that through his passionate pursuit of justice for people who have been murdered or otherwise made victims of crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love that it was a police procedural, but it wasn't a perfect police service. Like there were budget cuts. There were outdated services. There was actually, you know, the coroner was just an OBGYN. That it was not, he was working with less resources that we normally will see. That would make it unique about a place where what was going on. So how much research did you conduct to get the police procedural right?
Well, the answer I think to that is a lot, and in a lot of different ways.
Okay.
First, I had a lot of experience with investigations and with criminal law, with prosecutors during my legal practice. And so a lot of that, particularly the legal side of criminal justice, was very familiar to me. What was less familiar was the nitty-gritty of police procedural, how you do fingerprints, how you do blood analysis, weapons, the ballistics, and that sort of thing. And I did a lot of reading. I looked at forensics books and books on that are used for teaching police officers. I did a lot of internet research. And then I discovered something called the Writers Police Academy.
Ooh.
Which is held every year. It's a 3 or 4 day conference, and it's taught by local, federal, state, and specialized law enforcement people.
Mm-hmm.
There's usually somebody or several people from the FBI, from the Secret Service, from whatever the local community is, and they do seminars for about 3 days. And it's really fun because the police officers are really open about their activities, their practices, how they work. And I think they're equally fascinated by the writers who come in with these really bizarre situations and ask, you know, well, how would you deal with this or how would you deal with that? And you get into long conversations with them. That are very, very informative in addition to the classroom kinds of things.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine that would be a lot of fun.
I recommend that to any aspiring a police procedural writer who feels like they, you know, don't really have a handle on the techniques, because you will learn a lot in 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine that there's just a lot of information, but I think it would be great to put the hypotheticals with someone who has been doing it to say, is this a correct hypothetical or is this something that is off the base? You definitely should tweak it around and whatnot.
One of the things that they do that's a lot of fun is that they put you in a room with a gun that fires electronic bullets. And you have a movie screen in front of you, and the movie screen puts you in a position like you were in a police, like you were a police officer. And for example, you might be going into a building where somebody has called for help, and you don't know who the good guys are, you don't know who the bad guys are, and you've got this gun in your hand, and you've got to decide when is appropriate to shoot and when is not. And of course, it really pays off to shoot the bad guys and not the good guys. Mm-hmm. So you really get a feel for what it's like to be a police officer and to make those instantaneous life and death decisions.
That's fascinating. That's really good to hear. So let's talk about your writing. Do you follow an outline, or do you see where the story leads you?
You know, it's not always the same, but okay. In general, I know where the story is going to start.
Okay.
And I know where the story is going to end.
Okay.
And I've heard other authors say that it's when you get into the middle of the book that you find out whether or not you really have a book. And that's frequently where I find I have the most, it's the most challenge to put together the pieces of the story that lead from this beginning to the end. And in that process, I try to layer my mysteries. So if you look at Off the Grid, there's a real mystery at the beginning of the book about who the victims are.
Yeah.
And as that unfolds, then there's a mystery about, well, who killed them? Mm-hmm. And that unfolds. And then there's a mystery about, well, these guys turned out to be hired killers. Who's the mastermind here? Mm-hmm. And then there's the whole question of why. So you get these layered mysteries within the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it felt like a puzzle. It felt like I was seeing all the pieces at the beginning, and then they were like slowly coming to terms. Like I was like, oh, put this piece here, and there's like layers of like just understanding the story. And it felt like, for me, it was page turning because I wanted to know what was going to happen next. So I love the fact there were multiple mysteries or layers that allowed the story to unfold perfectly.
Well, and it actually requires, at least it requires me to go back and rework portions of the book earlier as I develop the mysteries. I then have to go back and plant the clues that you see that, you know, lead the reader to where the story actually goes. So it's an iterative process for me. I write and then I frequently go back and make substantial changes to make the story fit together the way I want it to fit together.
I love it. So how do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you keep your ideas, inspirations, and characters?
Well, I work on a laptop.
Okay.
And I use Scribner. I used Word for a long time, but I've switched to Scribner,
okay,
which allows me to write in chunks. Or little files, and then you can very easily flip the files around so that if you put something in the wrong place, you can easily go back and move it. You can, when you get ready to print the story, you can print the files in any order that you want. If you get them in the wrong order, you can switch it.
It allows you
to keep all kinds of notes. You can see what you're doing either in an outline form, or you can actually see it as like it's postcards on a big bulletin board, and you can move them around to fit the story together the way you want. I find it to be a very effective way of writing.
Yeah, I can imagine that definitely can keep you organized with the writer, but still saving all the different things. So do you back up multiple times or just making sure like everything's saved in the right place?
Well, the program saves itself every time you stop. But I also do, just out of abundance of caution, save it at various points, so I could go back if I wanted to. But I found it actually to be quite reliable in saving what I'm doing.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah, I can imagine. You don't want to be losing. You have a great idea. You have, like, you've been able to organize all these different things and then be like, it's gone. So you don't want to have that to happen. So I'm glad that it actually auto-saves.
But, you know, it's interesting because if you really get into the story, it just follows you around. I mean, I'm thinking about in the shower in the morning, I go out for a walk. I'm thinking about how the characters fit together. When I get stuck, I will sit down and outline maybe 4 or 5 or 6 different ways that I could escape from the box I've built for myself. Mm-hmm. Usually one of those will work. But that's usually the process I use.
I love it. So do you share the work, your work along the way, or do you wait till it's completed for others to read?
You know, I talk through some of the issues with my wife or my daughter. I occasionally will give a small piece of it to my wife to edit. She's really quite good at that. But in general, I've got a pretty complete manuscript before I let it out of my hands.
Okay.
I do enough rewriting as I go along so mm-hmm. that I really don't want to ask anybody to invest the time mm-hmm. In reading it until I think I have a pretty complete product.
Okay.
But having said that, once I get there, my advice to any young author is find a really good editor. And when mm-hmm. I say an editor, I don't mean somebody who's going to correct your grammar and your spelling. Mm-hmm. I mean somebody who's going to challenge you on the substance of the story. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you've thought it through, who'll give you a different perspective, and that frequently drives you back to rewrite something, mm-hmm. and I find it just enormously valuable.
Mm. Yeah, I can imagine. I think an editor is like someone who can actually take the story to the next level. Like, a writer is a great writer, but they can take the writer to even a higher level. By having the right editor who can look at the story and can give you.
I agree completely with that. I think that's absolutely true. One of the things I've said over the years is that the greatest gift that one human being can give to another is to offer a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a really good editor does, is offer a different perspective and show you either that there's a flaw in your work or that you can take it to a higher level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now let's get to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with our audience what they should read next. So what is your favorite genre?
Well, I read a lot of mysteries and thrillers, mm-hmm. but I also read a fair amount of nonfiction. I really enjoy historical pieces. David McCullough is one of my favorites, who wrote The Bridge, and a number mm-hmm. of other wonderful historical stories.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember in reading the Bridge, it really surprised me that the Brooklyn Bridge was built at the same time as Custer's Last Stand and the mm-hmm. Chicago World's Fair. I mean, I just... interesting connections in history.
Yeah.
My reading is quite varied. I'm also very interested in science and astronomy, mm-hmm. and I've read some of Stephen Hawking. I've read a good deal about black holes. It's an eclectic taste.
Who's your favorite author?
Favorite authors?
Yeah.
Oh, I could give you a whole long list of them. I'm a big fan of Michael Conley.
Okay.
I've recently discovered Jane Harper.
Oh, yeah.
Who wrote The Dry and The Lone Man, which are just wonderful stories.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets you out into the Australian outback,
mm-hmm.
and the descriptions just make your throat dry from the descriptions of the climate. I really enjoy her. Daniel Silva is a favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Iles and his Mississippi stories are wonderful. I love Craig Johnson, mm-hmm. the Longmire series, the Western Star, Junkyard Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I read all of Lee Child. I was just really sorry when Stieg Larsson died. I thought the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and that series was fabulous.
Yes, it was.
Ben Coase has written some interesting things. I think his first novel, Power Down, was fabulous. Taylor Stevens, the informationalist, and she's created a fantastic character. When I really like an author, it's for one of several reasons. It's either because they have described a place. Greg Isles and Mississippi is an example. Jane Harper and Australia is an example. Mm-hmm. Or has really come up with a really, really interesting character. Mm-hmm. I mean, the salamander, the girl with the dragon tattoo, is just an absolutely grabbing character. Taylor Stevens' character in The Informationalist does the same thing for me. Then if you want to read a mystery that's a little bit lighter and is really fun, Martin Walker's mystery stories that are the protagonist is a small-time cop in rural France who spends as much time talking about wine and food as he does about detective work, but they're really fun.
And then
Eric Larson is one of my favorites. The Devil in the White City.
Yeah.
About the Chicago World's Fair. Just a great, great book and a really fun author.
Yeah. So what are your top three favorite books of all time?
Well, I must put Michener's Hawaii in there.
Yeah.
I tell everybody who goes to Hawaii that they ought to read that book before they get there. Because it just paints a landscape, a picture, a history. He does it so from 40,000 feet and then brings it down to a lower level. But it's so useful in understanding the place when you first get there.
Mm-hmm.
I recently took a cruise to Antarctica. Preparation for that, read Lansing's Endurance, which is one of the great survival stories of all time. The way in which Shackleton managed to save not only himself but his crew, it was just, it's an incredible story. You just cannot believe the deprivation, and yet they survived. I'd put Thomas Friedman, The World is Flat, up there with really interesting books that dissect what's going on in the world. And then I've mentioned McCullough. I like his history. So there are four different examples.
I love it. What has been a book that you read this year that you love?
Oh, Daniel Silver's The Other Woman, I thought was fabulous, because of the way in which he takes this whole history of espionage and spies and spins it into a whole new tale. I thought it was actually a real tour de force.
I can't wait to read that book. I'm actually looking forward to it. So tell us where you can find it online.
www.robertbmccaw.com.
Thank you.
I put in my blog, there's a list of books that I've recently read and like, so there's some more recommendations there if you're looking for them.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being in the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I've really enjoyed chatting with you, and I hope your readers enjoy this.
Thank you, Robert, for your interview. For show notes and a list of books mentioned in this podcast, please visit whattoreadnextblog.com. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back this Thursday with the Book Recommendation Show.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourneedsblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.